This podcast is part of the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. This is part two of the two-part series, The Racist Roots of Gun Control. Last time, we like to talk about what are indeed the racist roots of what the antis like to call gun control, but what we really know is gun restriction, and that is what I will call it. See, remember, you can't have these colored folks walking around with the means to defend themselves. No, no. However, would the police, the vigilantes, the terrorist groups like the KKK, and so on, be able to keep terrorizing black people if their would-be victims are armed? Can't very well do that now, can ya? Huh, even as recently as 1963, Bull Connor of Birmingham, Alabama, you remember him, right? He would have had a much tougher time if all those Negroes had been armed, huh? You know, the fire hoses, the dogs, all that. And I remind you, usually the cops, the sheriff, and so on, were members of the KKK. Yeah, the law enforcement folks. The very ones sworn to protect the people. And we'll get to that part in a moment. They were the ones wearing the white sheets. Yeah, but I know what you're thinking. Oh, but it couldn't happen now. We're in modern times. Come on. We got the Civil Rights Acts. We got the Voting Rights Act, Brown versus Board of Education, all that good stuff. Those old days you're talking about there, Cowboy T, they're ancient history, the artifacts of a bygone era, long before most of us were even born. Oh? Really? You sure about that? I'm not so sure about that. I seem to recall reading about racial problems with the police happening not too long ago, actually. Well, at least for me it wasn't too long ago. Maybe I'm just getting old now that I'm, you know, my 40s and all. That must be it. I'm just getting old now. Well, this 40-something old fart here remembers hearing about some folks getting beaten down Rodney King style. Y'all remember Rodney King, right? The guy who got beaten down by those fine officers of the Los Angeles Police Department, the LAPD. Officer Stacy Kuhn and company. Yeah, those guys. Well, that wasn't the only time. Matter of fact, it was happening quite a bit. Black people were getting pulled over and then beaten senseless, just like what happened to Mr. King. Happened to someone just about every day. And it was at the hands of, you guessed it, white cops. And the crime, the grievous crime that brought on these kinds of beatings? 10 miles over the speed limit. Failure to come to a complete stop at a stop sign. Burned out taillights. You know, really heinous stuff like that. Broken bones, contusions, concussions, permanent nerve damage, scarring for life. And these were the folks who were supposed to be sworn to protect and serve us? This was a year before I was born, in the year 1967. Just to give you a little perspective, Neil Armstrong, who just left us last year, took that one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind, 2 years later when I was a year old. Like I said, not so long ago, at least not the way I see it. This was in Oakland, California, right across the Bay Bridge from where I was born. A group of black Americans decided that enough was enough, and they formed a group to do patrols around Oakland. Miranda? That wasn't even a consideration to these cops, even though that Supreme Court ruling had come out in 1966. So, this group resolved to ensure that Miranda was respected, and that these Rodney King-style beatdowns stopped. In that day, it was legal to open carry, loaded shotguns. So that's what they did. You may have heard of this group. They were called the Black Panthers. My dad knew them personally. He'd seen some of those beatdowns by the police, and yes, the Black Panthers patrols did stop some of those beatdowns. Here's what they'd do. They'd listen to the police radio for when a black person was arrested. Then they'd show up, shotguns in hand or slung over their shoulders, and ensure that Miranda was read, that basic human rights are respected. Sure enough, it worked pretty darn well, actually. Of course, this scared the daylights out of not just the police, but also the all-white legislature, as well as one Governor Ronald Reagan. And the Mulford Act of that same year was the result. This was specifically designed to legally disarm the Black Panthers. Once that was done, the beatings resumed. And these beatdowns have continued, and do continue, to this day. But now it's even worse. Now, the LAPD just shoots and kills you. Especially if you're black or Latino who actually looks Native American. Yeah, now they just shoot you. And the shooting is generally ruled justifiable. You know, that blue shield, and the cop gets a free pass. Not sure about you, but that sounds pretty well like racial tyranny to me. Think I'm just paranoid? Think I've been hanging around with some extremists, whether they be left-wingers or right-wingers, for a little too long? A little too much? The short answer is no. But let's tackle that in more detail in just a moment when we come back from Station ID. I'll explain to you why I'm still concerned today about all this. See you in a bit.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.
We're back. Some of you may be wondering if Cowboy T here has gotten the tinfoil hat syndrome, aren't you? Maybe a little bit? For you liberal friends of mine, maybe you're wondering if those right-wingers are drawing Cowboy T here away from the side of liberalism. And for my conservative friends, I don't know, maybe I just have a hard-on against the police. Nope, neither one is true. I'm still very much a liberal, through and through, rest assured, that's not the issue. And no, I don't hate the cops. Let's get that out of the way right now. I know far too many of them. The actual issue is that you simply can't make this stuff up, folks. Well, not if you got any sense of honor anyways, and I do. I'm not sure if you've heard about this before, but we've mentioned it here on the Liberals Gun Corner once, so maybe twice. There was a fellow who heard all sorts of commotion in his yard sometime after midnight. This was October 27th, 2008, about 4.5 years ago. His pregnant wife was asleep next to him 6 weeks from delivering their baby girl. This fellow was a pretty big guy, but still he wasn't taking any chances. He got a stick, about 1.5 inches thick or so, maybe about 3 or 4 feet long, went to find out what the heck was going on, what was making all that commotion. He got confronted with someone who shouted at him to drop it. Knowing he had a pregnant wife inside the house, he shouted something back. We don't know what. Probably something like, get off my property, or who the hell are you, or I ain't dropping nothing, or something similar. We know he shouted something back. Next thing that this fella knows, he's got 2 bullets in his chest and he's bleeding to death. What the hell happened? Well, it turns out some Anaheim police officer had been chasing after some kids who were suspected of burglary. Juveniles. They were apprehended later. Turns out they looked nothing like the guy that this officer shot and killed. The officer was named Kevin Flanagan. The man that was shot was named Julian Alexander. Fairly large adult man, 20 years old, 6'5", sturdily built fellow. Worked at the UPS loading dock, I understand, so you know he was no wimpy guy. Looked just like a defensive lineman on the football team, at least judging from his picture. Those juveniles? They weren't anywhere near that size. Didn't look anything like Julian Alexander. Internal Affairs ruled it a justifiable shooting, and the district attorney said, hey, nothing wrong, officer was within his rights, nothing to see here, time to move along. Total sweep under the rug. This officer, Kevin Flanagan, was never prosecuted. Matter of fact, he was put right back on duty. We don't know if Julian Alexander knew he was facing a cop, and now we'll never know. We don't know if Officer Kevin Flanagan identified himself as a police officer. His pregnant wife was apparently wide awake as Julian went out to confront this apparent intruder, and she reports she heard no such announcement. I'm sure you figured it out by now. Officer Kevin Flanagan is white. Julian Alexander, the one who got shot and killed, was black. Yep. I got an update on this story because this shooting really disturbed me, and it should disturb you too. Turns out the Alexander family didn't take this lying down. Since they were denied a criminal prosecution against this officer, they went for the only remaining legal route, a civil lawsuit. In 2010, the city of Anaheim quietly settled the case for $1.5 million. Wow. To Julian Alexander's widow and his little daughter. Now the girl is 4.5 years old. The city of Anaheim also paid another $50,000 to Julian's parents, including attorney's fees. But even with that, the city of Anaheim denies any wrongdoing. District Attorney Tony Rakaukas denies any wrongdoing. The Anaheim Police Department denies any wrongdoing. And Officer Kevin Flanagan is still on the beat. Still out there. Who's going to be the next black man defending his family there in California that some trigger-happy cop kills? Oh, still think it can't happen in the modern era? Better think again, folks, because obviously it did. Here's what the actor and rapper Ice-T had to say about this very subject.
While he was here and news about the Denver shooting was coming in, I briefly took the opportunity to ask him about his own attitude towards guns. And I asked him why he's such a defender of the right to bear arms.
Well, I give up my gun when everybody else does.
And is that
doesn't
your...
that make sense?
Well...
doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you were to, if there were guns here, would you want to be the only person without one?
So do you carry guns...
not
routinely at home? I mean, you have a gun at home?
Yeah, it's legal in the United States. It's part of our Constitution. You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny. Not to hunt. It's to protect yourself from the police.
And do you see any link between that and these sorts of incidents?
No. Nah, not really. You know what I'm saying? If somebody wants to kill people, you know, they don't need a gun to do it.
Makes it easier, though, doesn't it?
Not really. You can use you can strap explosives on your body. They do that all the time.
So when there's the inevitable backlash mm-hmm. of the anti-gun lobby as a result of this incident, as it always is...
Well, that's not going to change anything in the United States.
Anything.
Nah. The United States is based on guns, you know? Like KRS says, you'll never have justice on stolen land. So it's not going to change.
There it is, folks. Right there. We'll take a short station ID break and be right back. More to come.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. Gunrightsradio.com.
Read after me. I,
Thomas Smith,
do solemnly swear to support the constitutions of the United States.
Do solemnly swear to support the constitutions of the United States.
And of the state of Minnesota.
And of the state of Minnesota.
And to discharge faithfully.
And to discharge faithfully.
The duties devolving upon me as chief of police.
The duties devolving upon me as chief of police.
Of the city of St. Paul.
Of the city of St. Paul.
To the best of my judgment and ability.
To the best of my judgment and ability.
Congratulations, chief.
Thank you, sir.
What you just heard was Thomas Smith taking the oath of office for St. Paul, Minnesota in the year 2010. He had just gotten promoted to chief of police. Additionally, there is a written version of the oath. Here's an example. I, state your name, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California. that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter. There's some other verbiage in there about you won't be a member of any organizations that want to overthrow the government of the United States or that of the state of California. I won't bore you with that, but just so you know that it's in there. That, what you just heard, is the oath of office of the state of California. All state employees must take it, including all police officers, anywhere you are. Every other state in our union has a similar oath. New York, Alabama, Texas, Arizona, Oregon, Illinois, all of them. City and county officers have similar requirements, as do military members. I had to take that oath. If you're a sworn law enforcement officer anywhere in this country, you must take this kind of oath. Why does any of that matter? Well, we're talking about the racist roots and modern results of gun restriction, folks. We just got through telling you about the killing of Julian Alexander by an Anaheim police officer. Yeah, sure, the city of Anaheim quietly settled, but that doesn't bring Julian back. His little daughter will never know her daddy. There's also the story of Oscar Grant, another black man who was killed by, yep, you guessed it, another white cop. This cop was Officer Johannes Messerly, and there were three other white cops there, three male cops, one female cop. This happened a few months after what happened to Julian Alexander. However, this time, there was lots of video footage. Thankfully, a bunch of people had phone cameras and recorded the incident from start to finish. It is very well documented, even graphically so, from several angles. Well, those four fine officers of the Bay Area Rapid Transit Police Department apparently didn't like that. At gunpoint, they started confiscating people's smartphones. Yeah, confiscating their phones. Seems like they didn't want any evidence of what really happened to get out. But the cops didn't get them all. When they started taking people's phones, the remaining folks got on the train in a hurry and got away with their phones. Then, these witnesses went to the news media, smartphones in hand. These video clips got millions of hits on YouTube. Coverage blanketed the Bay Area. This thing went totally viral. I saw those video clips myself. Oscar Grant, the black man in question here, had in fact been totally subdued on the ground. I saw it. There was no reason for this officer Messerly to pull his gun and shoot him. But he did anyway. And now Oscar Grant is dead, too. Remember, the shooting of Julian Alexander was still fresh in people's minds. For those of you who don't know about Oakland, California, the way I do, it is predominantly black American. They knew all about what happened to Julian, rest assured. Word travels fast. And if it hadn't been for all that video footage and the excruciatingly negative press the BART police got, well, this too probably would have been swept under the rug, just like for Officer Kevin Flanagan. But with all that press, the district attorney couldn't get away with that. Oh, they tried for a little while, sure, yeah. But there was just too much attention, too much video footage, too many eyewitnesses this time. So what happened to Officer Messerly? Oh, he did end up in front of a judge. He got 2 years for manslaughter. He was let out after serving 11 months. Less than a year. In the county jail, not the state penitentiary. And he actually tried to have the conviction reversed as soon as he was released. Thankfully, this time, the California State Supreme Court rejected that motion. Wow, 11 months for killing someone who was already restrained. Oh, and it turns out this now former Officer Messerly had another incident involving racial police brutality just 2 months previously to that one. Uh-huh, this guy's a repeat offender. Apparently he and some other officers overheard another black man, Kenneth Carruthers, sharply criticizing the BART police as, and I quote, useless. Apparently Mr. Carruthers' vehicle had gotten broken into at a BART station. And he wasn't too pleased about that. It is said that Mr. Carruthers used profanity, and plenty of it, which I suspect is very likely true. But mere profanity, while admittedly not nice, doesn't merit police brutality. He went to trial. That time, though, Officer Meserly got off. The difference? No video. Just police testimony. Just like with Julian Alexander and Officer Kevin Flanagan. Let's do a little thought exercise here. Imagine the tables turn for a moment. Say a black civilian had killed a white cop. Yeah, we're reversing the tables now. Similar to either one of the two situations we just talked about. And said black civilian claims, I was in fear for my life. Just like those two white cops did. Would the justice system give that civilian a 2-year manslaughter sentence? Would they let him out after 11 months? I think we all know better. In the real world, unless he can afford someone like a Johnny Cochran or a Melvin Belli, that black civilian would be doing hard time in the hardest state penitentiary that the judge and the DA could give him. It would have been a minimum of 20 years, surely, possibly life with no possibility of parole. The folks in the justice system don't like cop killers, see. But apparently they don't seem to mind killer cops too much, especially if the one who got killed is black. It's been happening for decades, and as you just heard, it's still happening. Oh, and now we can add brown-skinned Latinos to the list, too. They're catching the blues from the cops, too. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, you know, Sheriff Joe of Maricopa County, Arizona, he just recently got a smackdown from a federal court who found him guilty of racial profiling. So that claim of, it can't happen in today's modern era? How's that sound right about now? We'll take a short break for station ID and we'll be right back. There's more.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or a $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
Folks, this was another fairly heavy-duty episode of the Liberals' Gun Corner. We do that here. We need to. And it's not going to be the last one either. Now, I know some of you are thinking, Cowboy T, you were BSing when you said you don't have a hard-on against the cops. Well, no, I wasn't. I know too many cops. Way too many to have a hard-on against the cops. What I have a hard-on against is this notion that if you disarm the law-abiding public, everything's going to be okay. The police will take care of you. Well, I think historically we've shown that that's not always necessarily the case. That's why we're talking about this. That's why I just got through telling you about the racist roots of gun restriction, what the antis, of course, like to antiseptically call gun control. No, it's gun restriction. Let's call it what it really is. Consider the historical results of such laws here in this country. We just talked about them over the two parts of this two-part episode, or I should say two-part series. That is why the Black Panthers of the 1960s did what they did, folks. They had virtually no other choice. And that is why we need an armed citizenry for defense against tyrannical use of government force. Notice how I've been kind of focusing on California here. Well, A, it's because I'm from there and I know the state. And B, because of how difficult the state of California makes it for ordinary citizens to even own a gun, let alone carry one for self-defense. Unless, of course, you're well connected with political decision makers. That is also true of New York, by the way. I remind you of why the Mulford Act, that would be California Penal Code Section 12031, was signed into law. The press back then even called it the Black Panther Law, because that's exactly what it is. Scared whites just couldn't stomach the thought, the very thought, of blacks being able to defend themselves from brutal beatings by the very people sworn to protect them. You just heard the oath before. And that whole way of thinking, the whole reasoning behind the Mulford Act, had its origins in the slave-era South, continued in the post-Civil War Jim Crow South, all the way until the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and a bunch of work by a whole lot of incredibly brave people. But even so, as I think we've just shown you, that wasn't enough. It's still happening now. You'd think that Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Jewish woman who is acutely aware of the Holocaust, would know better. You'd think that Representative John Lewis of Georgia, who marched with Martin Luther King Jr. and got savagely beaten during those civil rights marches with him, would know better. You'd think that President Barack Obama, the first black president we've ever had, who once upon a time was brave enough to point out the, quote, long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately, close quote, you'd think he'd know better. Matter of fact, here are the president's own words regarding just that.
There is a long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately. And that's just a fact. As you know, Lynn, when I was in the state legislature in Illinois, we worked on a racial profiling bill because there was indisputable evidence that blacks and Hispanics were being stopped disproportionately. And that is a sign, an example of how, you know, race remains a factor in the society. That doesn't lessen the incredible progress that has been made. I am standing here as testimony to the progress that's been made. And yet, the fact of the matter is that, you know, this still haunts us. And even when there are honest misunderstandings, the fact that blacks and Hispanics are picked up more frequently and oftentimes for no cause casts suspicion even when there is good cause. And that's why I think the more that we're working with local law enforcement to improve policing techniques so that we're eliminating potential bias, the safer everybody's going to be.
So given all that, you'd think he'd know better. Well, now you know better. I hope you use this information wisely. Think about it when you vote for your elected officials, both at the state and federal level, this coming election, and every election. What we've described here, defenselessness in the face of racist tyranny, or any tyranny for that matter, is that really what we as a people want? I sure hope not. This is America, and we're supposed to be better than that. We need to be better than that. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. Till then, safe shooting, study your history, keep practicing, and thanks for listening.